great. Sensational. Terrific. What is it?
I told you.
Science. Crimeology.
Are you with me?
Not exactly with you, but somewhere nearby.
Oh.
This is Cybercrimeology, a podcast about cybercrime, its research, and its researchers. My name is Michael, and this episode is about you, your research, the research of your colleagues, and the importance of safeguarding the information in your research. This has always been a concern or a consideration for ethical research, but as we dive deeper into the information age, the nature of the concern is evolving. The Canadian government has been taking steps to help researchers to better deal with these issues and to ensure that research is properly protected. And so, joining us today is Sinead Tuitt, who is the Senior Director for the Digital Research Infrastructure Branch within the Science and Research Sector at Innovation, Science and Economic Development Canada, or ISED. Sinead manages various teams that support cybersecurity research and development and contribute to the advancement of Canada's research security strategy. They have been developing a resource for researchers on safeguarding your research, which is actually quite helpful. And of course, there'll be a link to that in the show notes. It's quite an opportunity for us to have a respected representative from ISED on the show to talk about the state of play and the program. So if you're a Canadian researcher, put on a pot of coffee and strap in. If you aren't in Canada, I urge you to stay with us, as a lot of the points discussed are universal, and other countries are developing or have developed their own tools and instruments that are similar in intent. For example, Australia invested $1.6 million towards university security. The CPNI in the UK has published Trusted Research Guidance for Academia. And the US has the direction from the May 12th executive order on improving the nation's cybersecurity. This much to say that regardless of where you are, this is important to you. What's more, as you've probably some understanding of the world of cybercrime and cybersecurity, you're probably well placed to help your colleagues understand how these concerns affect them. So, with that, let's get into our chat with Sinead about safeguarding research. Before I get to asking her to share her perspective and insights on the issue, though, I did notice that we have in common the experience of teaching English as a second language. I taught English in South Korea, and our guest taught English in Japan. I did that for a number of years, and I found that it was an enjoyable and a very sort of important, formative experience for me, and I learned a lot from it. But I did see a t-shirt once that said something along the lines of, I'd rather be teaching English in Japan, which of course made me really curious. So I had to ask her what the experience of teaching English in Japan was like.
Yeah, similarly, I found it to be a really great experience. And I was there for 2 years. So I taught at a series of junior high schools and an elementary school when I was there. But I think the skills I took away from the experience were more transferable in general. So I really appreciated the understanding of bias and culture in informing our worldview and the importance of stepping out of that from time to time and recognizing that when it comes up. And I think from an engagement perspective as well, the value of meeting people where they are instead of where you want them to be, particularly in terms of teaching children and junior high school students learning a second language. You really have to focus on what is your message, what do you want to communicate, and how do you do that in a way that actually resonates with your audience, which is something that I try to still apply today in terms of my discussions within government and with stakeholders and on complicated issues. So it was a great experience. I think the t-shirt is right. I would definitely recommend teaching English in Japan.
And I suppose those skills have been helpful in your professional life?
Definitely. I consider myself a generalist in government. So I've worked in different departments on different issues. And while I've become an expert in how government works, I'm not an expert in any of the subject matter that I deal with. And while a lot of teams have a mix of subject matter experts and generalists on how to move things forward, one of the most important skill sets that I bring to an issue is that explanation and narrative function in terms of sometimes being able to simplify an issue or a message for non-technical experts. What is this issue? Why is it important? Why should I care about this issue? Why should we act? And why is this the best course of action? And definitely the areas I've worked on, I've really developed as well an inclination towards engagement and co-development wherever possible. Because when you're not an expert in a subject matter, you really need to lean on those experts for the technical specifics. And when you work in a multi-stakeholder environment, you also rely on people to implement. No one, I think, in government or in most areas of society today can do things alone as a silo. And so you really do need to be able to work with people to identify their priorities, their perspectives, to explain yours. And maybe if you don't come to consensus, at least come to an understanding in order to be able to move things forward. So the value of communication and of translation, not necessarily from English to French or into a different language, but for different subject matter experts and being able to package and explain the issue in a way that actually resonates with them and they can understand, I think is a really important skill set in government.
And one of the important areas you've been devoting these skills to recently is the security of research.
Yeah, so research security has been an increasing priority for the government of Canada, but also I think governments and academic communities around the world over the last few years. And while the lexicon is sometimes different, it's really about the ability and those measures to identify and understand the potential risks to research and the research ecosystem. Specifically, those with a security implication in terms of unwanted access, interference, or unauthorized transfer of research data and research knowledge, as well as the measures that actually help minimize or mitigate these risks and protect both the research process and the research outputs as a result. And so I think from a Canadian perspective, we see this as really important and a foundational piece to protecting the foundation of research and research integrity overall. While some of the either drivers or outcomes might have a national security impact, which is what makes it different from our general frameworks and measures related to research integrity, really it is about trust and integrity and mutual reciprocity. And how do you make sure that those values and principles remain intact and a key factor of our research processes in Canada? Our national security partners have identified increasing activity of this nature, as have national security departments and agencies around the world, and that there are organizations and states out there that are actually seeking to target research for their own use and not necessarily for transparent and disclosed measures. So research security is really about protecting research from those activities, from those actors, and making sure that researchers have the ability to decide who accesses and uses their research at what point in the process, and that they have trust and confidence in the process and the outputs and maintain that control in terms of how it is used, whether that is for open source and public good, whether that might be for commercial development or publication. It's really about research integrity and research protection.
The problems with someone stealing confidential information or intellectual property are pretty sort of clear and easy to understand, particularly for engineering and computer science, and even social science research has a lot of sensitive information. What really scares me is the idea that someone might modify data or results, that leave people to produce papers with errors or faulty outcomes, and then them having to deal with the fallout of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really is about trust and integrity. If you don't know who is accessing your data, do you know what they are doing with your data? And as a researcher, are you comfortable with how they might use your data or your research outputs? A lot of our focus from a government perspective has been on what we call sensitive research areas. So research areas that may have a higher potential of dual use. A researcher or research project may be very much focused on civilian use or a civilian application. You mentioned social sciences, health research, collection of data. But if you don't know who's actually accessing your research or transferring your research and using it for their own purposes, there are areas where it could be used by a foreign state, a foreign organization to support national security developments. And researchers lose control of the ability to decide if that's something they want to participate in or not, if they haven't protected their research and their research outputs. And they then lose the ability to actually make deliberate choices about who uses their research, how and when. You know, of course, in an open science environment, you know, it might be legitimate to say, well, I'm going to put it out there and I can't actually control how others may use it eventually, which I think as a deliberate choice is totally fine and acceptable in terms of how research is conducted and how research is done. But if there is a higher than normal potential for that research to be used for national security purposes, to be used for military intelligence surveillance purposes, that is something that a researcher might be considering in terms of what data and outputs is made open source, what may need to be protected or might need to have some protections in place as part of the release to guard against that potential unauthorized dual use of the actual research. So that's something from a Canadian perspective we've been particularly focused on in terms of the measures. We don't see open science and research security as being in conflict. We see them as two sides of the same coin, but it is about making sure that you are making deliberate choices throughout your research process about what is shared for what purposes, under what circumstances. And if protections need to be put in place to guard against misuse, unauthorized access, unauthorized transfer, or some of those dual use activities, that again, that the researcher and the project team are actually able to make those decisions and don't lose the ability to decide under what circumstances and when in the research process their data may be made open and available for others to also use and build on.
Now, you're not a technical or a cybersecurity expert, which is great for me because we can have this conversation without me having to learn any weird new words. But the pandemic has really sort of changed how much technology and cyber we have to deal with when we do work and research. It's changed things.
Yeah, and I think as non-experts in cybersecurity, when we talk to the research community, it really is less about, you know, what's your hardware, what's your software, what are the specific technical aspects you need to put in place to protect yourself against unauthorized and unwanted cyber access, which is really important. There are a lot of technical experts out there. And for the research community, starting with your chief information officer and your IT services branch within an institution is essential to actually help you understand, do you have the right hardware and software in place to protect your research? But a lot of the risks and considerations that we emphasize when we're talking about protecting research are human related. It's about due diligence. It's about clear rules and understanding about who can access data when and under what circumstances. It is about good research hygiene, not only in terms of who are you working with and how are you treating your information, but how are you making sure that you are not an easy target for either cyber intrusion or other mechanisms to access your research without your authorization. So it really is about what are the activities and behaviors that you can put in place to protect your research and make sure that you are not an easy target for those who would seek unauthorized access to it. And knowing when you should be seeking that technical expertise from others to make sure that you actually have the right hardware, software, policies, frameworks, procedures in place to then protect it from a technology perspective as well. So we really do try to emphasize this is about research hygiene. It is about due diligence. What might be new is that national security aspect in terms of who is trying to access your research or how and why they might want to use it at the end. But the mechanisms that they're using and the activities we're concerned about are the same that researchers should be concerned about regardless of the motivation. It is, are people able to access my research? Are they going to use it in a way that I have authorized? Am I going to be recognized and or compensated as appropriate for the work that I have done? And do I have line of sight as needed on how my work is actually being used? So we do really try to focus on what are the hygiene measures? What are the due diligence measures? What are the mechanisms that a researcher could use, that an institution could use, that a government could support or facilitate in terms of awareness, in terms of encouraging, and in certain cases, maybe requiring measures be put in place. But it is part of your regular research hygiene and due diligence to think about what are the risks, regardless of where they come from, and how do I protect myself from those risks.
And these risks aren't new. Canada has some particular stories of its own with regards to keeping an eye on what's being done with engineering advancements and research development. But in the last couple of years, we had a very interesting application of science in that we had basically the whole world mobilizing scientific resources for a single aim of finding a vaccine for COVID. Did we see these kinds of issues with even amongst a global scientific effort for COVID?
Potentially the silver lining through COVID was the ability of the global science and research community to come together and mobilize and collaborate and work effectively for the common good. And recognizing it wasn't a snap effort and built on decades of research that came before it, that mobilization across disciplines, across borders, and toward a single shared common good was a success of science. And again, from a Government of Canada perspective, the Government of Canada supports open science, supports collaborative science, supports science in the public good. And I think would also acknowledge that that was a scientific success during COVID in terms of the ability of the global research and science community to come together for that purpose. But I also think the digital nature of those collaborations and of research in general during COVID, as so many of us moved out of a physical office or out of a physical lab onto a digital environment, also did increase some of the potential vulnerabilities from a cyber perspective. And while I'm not a technical expert, I do know that Government of Canada colleagues at the Canadian Security Establishment and the Canadian Security and Intelligence Service did identify an uptick in COVID-related cybersecurity intrusions and attacks. So while the vast majority of the global research community was working together and collaboratively towards a vaccine, towards antivirals, towards better understanding the disease and its impacts, there were actors out there that were seeking to take advantage of that collaboration to gain early access, to use it potentially for their own unknown purposes that were not part of that shared understanding of global scientific collaboration. So I think the fact that national security partners in Canada and around the world took the unprecedented step of naming those attacks and in some cases naming the source of those attacks really was a turning point from this is happening and we should be aware. And there's the occasional incident that maybe makes the paper and people say, oh, it actually is happening, but that's probably isolated or maybe a one-off or doesn't impact me specifically, to a more generalized awareness of this happening at scale and the potential of this happening at scale. So I think COVID also did demonstrate the nature of this risk for research. And again, the importance of protecting your research to maintain that trust and that integrity and ultimately those global collaborations. When you are transparent, when there is a shared understanding, when there is mutual reciprocity and a common goal, it is easier to collaborate. When those things don't exist and actors out there are seeking to access research for their own undisclosed purposes or their own benefit at the expense of those trust and integrity frameworks, it is a risk to the research ecosystem overall.
You mentioned earlier about threats. Would you mind filling me in a little bit more on what those threats actually are?
Sure. And I think there's two aspects to understanding risk as it relates to research security. So one is understanding your research and how it might be used and who might be interested in your research. And that's something that a lot of times researchers themselves may have a very good sense of, either informally or formally. Again, recognizing there are clear limitations. You can't anticipate or understand how everyone may choose to use your research in all circumstances. But there are some research areas that may be considered sensitive in terms of that potential for dual use in a civilian and national security perspective, the potential for breakthrough and sector leading research that may be of interest to others, potentially for their economic, commercial, or other impacts overall, and the potential as well to work with partners who may want to use your research, again, for purposes or reasons that you would not support if it was transparent and disclosed to you. You know, a lot of research in the digital and emerging technology space fits into this, but again, health research, personal information, genetic information, social sciences, personal data, even political views, things of that nature may be of interest. And from a research security perspective, we're particularly interested in those things that might be of interest to foreign states, organizations, militaries, or their proxies, where there is a state-supported component to the work. There will always be cybercrime. There may be activists as well as commercial motivations for people to access your data and to seek to use your research. And as you mentioned, a lot of that exists and has existed for a long time. The sophistication might be increasing, and the ability to do so in an evolving digital world may be increasing and changing. And protecting your research can protect you against those threats as well. So we're really focused on understanding and being able to identify the nature of the risk. As I mentioned, researchers have a role to play. The Government of Canada has a role to play in terms of actually naming some of those risks and providing information to the research community in terms of what is being targeted to higher degrees, in terms of how it is being targeted and how you can protect yourself, and in terms of the activities and organizations that may be of concern at a particular point in time. So there is an aspect of knowing your research and knowing the national security landscape, and safeguarding your research is really about trying to bring those two elements together so that you can then make an informed assessment of the potential risks that might apply to your specific research or your specific research project.
I've been kind of discussing this in terms of cybersecurity because that's an area where I feel more comfortable. But this is security in general that we're talking about. And my knowledge of espionage only extends to black and white films with people wearing fedora hats carrying manila envelopes. But there is also an aspect of making sure the people who you're working with are conducting themselves in a way that you anticipate, trust, and that yourself and your students haven't been somehow convinced, conned, compromised in some way to provide information about your research without any kind of cybersecurity incident.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, a number of these measures are your basic due diligence and research hygiene measures, and protecting yourself then against the misuse by having good hygiene practices and not making it easy for people to access your information, whether that be via physical access, via cyber access, via a partnership, the people that you are working or sharing information with, and as well in terms of your rights and licensing, that again, you're making informed decisions that value your research and not transferring it for purposes you wouldn't agree with or you're not recognized for appropriately. So cyber is one of the ways in which these organizations and individuals may seek unauthorized access to your data and your knowledge. In today's world and the way research is conducted, it's a significant one, and particularly given the digitization of data and the digitization of research, which has been accelerated through COVID. But as you mentioned, it is also about who are you working with? How are you working? How confident are you in the collaborations that you've put in place? And it is about making sure that some of those assumptions, some of those actions, some of those activities are documented, that there is a shared understanding. Similarly, as a researcher is developing, for example, a research partnership or a research collaboration, they would normally ask some basic questions about their collaborators. Do their research interests align? Could we work collaboratively together? Do we have a shared understanding and goal? Do we understand how we're going to be working together? And do we have an understanding of how the research will be used? Will it be published? Will it be patented? Will it be sold? Those basic questions. And really, in terms of safeguarding your research, it's just adding that one layer in terms of, is there a security aspect? Is there a security risk? Is that something that we need to identify and deal with through our hygiene measures, through our research collaboration, through our protocols that would exist anyways? And if it is, how do we build that into our research practice, to our research process, to our research hygiene?
I love that term, hygiene. And I saw it a bit in the safeguarding your research program as well. And I think that's it's a really nice set of education resources for academics. Excuse the tongue-in-cheek nature of the question. How did a good education package come out of federal government?
Well, thank you. I am glad to hear that you like the package. And I think with Safeguarding Your Research and the Safeguarding Your Research portal, we really have tried to be as clear and transparent as possible in terms of what are the risks, how does it impact research, how can you protect yourself from some of these risks? Because as you mentioned, for a lot of people, this does sound a little bit like science fiction or Hollywood movies, something that happens to other people who work on other things over there, as opposed to something that might be relevant and real for a specific researcher or a specific research project. So we really did want to provide as clear and specific information as we could that is relevant for a research context, that would really help researchers understand that these risks exist. They may be more or less relevant for specific research projects and research work. And as I mentioned, sometimes a researcher may have a good sense of how their research may be used or who may want to access their research. And sometimes it's something that they need to be supported in by the Government of Canada, by tools and guidance in terms of being able to identify whether that risk applies to their work or project. I will note that it's an evolving portal, an evolving set of resources. Over time, I imagine that we will get more specific, more granular, maybe more targeted for specific disciplines. Over time, I think we'd want to be able to give people more comfort in terms of the nature of risk and how it might apply in certain circumstances, as well as what risk mitigation measures are appropriate. But I think we also see this evolving with the research community. Going back to the beginning, at ICED, we are experts in science and research policy. We work with our national security partners to tell us about the risks and how it applies. And we need to work with the research community to make sure we actually have risk-targeted and science-appropriate measures in place. We really don't want to shut down research and shut down the research ecosystem because people are so afraid of potential risks or scares. We want to make sure that this is actually something that's doable, that does over time become kind of second nature in thinking about, and that researchers can make those decisions or those calls in terms of, this applies to me, it doesn't apply to me, but I'm going to put in place some base measures anyways, so our risk profile is low, or, oh yes, this is probably going to apply to me and I need to talk to technical experts in my institutions in the Government of Canada and maybe take some specific and targeted measures to decrease my risk overall.
It's good general advice for researchers anywhere in the world, but in Canada for researchers and particularly researchers in particular areas, if you're looking at applying for funding, these kind of measures will become or are much more important to you.
Yeah. So the Government of Canada has been working with the research community over the last 3 or 4 years to better articulate and understand these issues. And as you mentioned, start developing some tools and guidance to help researchers in the research community better understand this issue. In July 2021, the Government of Canada also released the National Security Guidelines for Research Partnerships, which built up some of the voluntary due diligence and guidance and tools that had been developed to that date, but actually applied a risk assessment and risk mitigation model to NSERC's Alliance program in the first instance. This is currently on a pilot basis, but the government did indicate its intention to apply it to relevant partnership programs across the granting councils after the pilot with NSERC was completed. We started with the NSERC Alliance program for a number of reasons. There are a number of areas in the natural sciences and engineering research fields that could be considered sensitive, that may be targeted on a more frequent basis for unauthorized access or transfer, and that do have a high potential for dual use in the national security perspective. There may be no military national security objective of specific projects, but in some of these areas, the potential for that use is higher than in others. So we did start on a risk basis in terms of this specific program. The guidelines do ask the researcher and their institution to complete a risk assessment on their research and on their partner to look at the potential of unauthorized transfer and specific targeting, and where appropriate, to propose mitigation measures to lower that risk. These assessments then go to NSERC and they do a validation and a confirmation. And currently, about 90 to 95% of the projects proceed as proposed. And there are a small percentage that then go to national security partners for review and advice back to the granting council in terms of the specific nature of the risk, whether the risk mitigation measures would be appropriate. And we anticipate in a very low number of cases where the risk may be so high it can't be mitigated, and therefore it wouldn't proceed for funding under the Alliance stream.
So I'd like to finish the interview with a couple of tips. Is there any points that you think people should remember?
Definitely. So first of all, research security is a shared responsibility. It is not something scary or that you need a very deep technical background or intelligence background to understand and apply. But there are resources and expertise increasingly within research institutions, but also within the government of Canada that can help with this. I think from a researcher perspective, it really is about due diligence and research hygiene. So eyes wide open in terms of who you're working with, how you're working, and the potential risks to your research. Know your research, know your partner, and ask questions, document, apply the same level of consideration and scrutiny from a security perspective that you would from an overall collaboration and alignment of interest and expertise perspective. That can go a long way. Again, the goal is not to shut down research, to stop partnerships, to stop collaboration. It is about making sure that your work can continue with appropriate measures to protect it, so that as a researcher, you can decide what to publish, when, and with whom. And some of the measures that you can think about and integrate at a project-specific level relate to data management, good data management practices, making sure it's clear and documented who accesses research data for what purposes, at what stage in the life cycle, and how it can be used. Cybersecurity measures and hygiene, anything from kind of basic cybersecurity measures in terms of not sharing your passwords, password protecting as necessary, securing your data, all the way to talking to your CIO or your IT services about the cybersecurity policies, frameworks, and practices that need to be in place to protect your research, and having intellectual property and knowledge sharing plans in terms of what you intend to do with the research at what stage. For some projects, it may be appropriate to actually formalize and collate all of this thinking into a research security plan that looks at identifying any specific risks that apply to your project and in terms of what measures you have in place. And again, making sure that there's just that shared understanding that you're not making assumptions, but it's actually documented, shared amongst all the members of your team, and that there's a clear basis for trust and collaboration moving forward. And again, as I mentioned, there are resources that can help you with this. They are evolving over time. And from a government side, we definitely see this as a learning file. that we need to work collaboratively with the research community on to make sure that we do get it right and we do get that balance between innovation and security right moving forward. But I think there's also a lot that researchers can do in terms of just being aware and understanding that this is a real issue. It could apply to their research, and there are measures they could put in place to make themselves less of a target and less open to these kind of risks.
Well, thanks for your time. Thanks for helping raise awareness about an important issue and the resources that are available to help people cope with it. And I look forward to seeing those programs evolve over time. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again to Sinead Tuitt for taking the time to discuss safeguarding research and the program's tools and instruments available to help researchers navigate this brave new world. Links to materials, of course, be available in the show notes. Now, if you were looking forward to a silly question, I hope you were satisfied with my efforts during the conversation because it wasn't time this week, but don't worry, it'll be back next episode. But in the meantime, this has been Cybercrimeology, a podcast about cybercrime, its research, and its researchers. It's produced by me, but it's only really made possible by the kind guests who share their time and their research. You can find out more about the show at cybercrimeology.com, and you can talk to me at cybercrimeology on Twitter.